When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to a Rare Drop podcast. Check us out at raredrop.co.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Rakari Austin, and I'm one of the hosts of GCX 2022. That's right. We're already talking about next year. Now, we want you to join us at Rosen Shingle Creek in Orlando, Florida, as we come together for another unforgettable GCX. Tickets are going fast, and look, we want to see you, so visit gcxevent.com/tickets to book now.
Explore epic sagas with Rare Drop Roleplay. Recap the latest in sports with Overplayed. Unleash your inner hero on comics. Dive into a galaxy far, far away through Star Wars and Scotch. And pick the brains of industry experts on Broman Podcast. Whatever you're looking for, Rare Drop Entertainment has you covered. Check out our full lineup at raredrop.co.
Actually get anything for Christmas.
What do you mean you didn't get anything for Christmas?
I didn't ask for anything for Christmas.
You didn't get anything? Nobody got you anything?
I got like pants, but I mean it wasn't like anything like cool.
Welcome to episode 64 of Star Wars and Scotch. I tricked him into a cold open again. Yes. Happy holidays.
I didn't get anything cool for Christmas.
From me and Tim, you know what I got?
What?
I got the Ralph McQuarrie art book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I tried to get you Star Wars socks, but when I went to Disney, they were all sold out.
Sounds about right. Disney sucks right now. Sorry.
I was going to. Yeah, no, it does. It sucks ass. it's really bad.
I'm going to Universal next time.
When we went, I found this cool little clothing shop at Disney Springs, and they had a whole Star Wars socks line. Kevin loves tall socks.
I do.
He likes tall socks with graphics on them, and I found the Star Wars collection, and they had them in small, so like little tiny dainty feet or extra Shaquille O'Neal large feet. So there was no in between.
Speaking of Shaq and totally random, did you know that the 10 most expensive homes sold in Orlando, 4 of them were in Disney's Golden Oaks?
That doesn't surprise me.
And one of those homes was Shaq.
So if we're going to talk about Golden Oaks, we drove by it and we saw some houses were being built. I'm like, I wonder how much these houses are going for.
They start at 2.5.
So the house that was built like in 2006 is going for like, and it's on a tiny little lot. Yeah, it's like $2.6 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's nuts.
Yeah.
Just so that you could live on Disney property, have a limo, have all access to Disney, like it's not worth it. I'd rather not.
No, especially now with Disney's like decline.
Not for 2,600 square feet. I'm good. Anyways, hey, we're gonna talk about boba.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first we're gonna talk about King's Coast Coffee because that's what I'm drinking this morning.
Me
and
too.
Of course. As is tradition, we totally put scotch in the coffee because that's the only way we can record an episode.
I would be a mess after stream if I, because I have to go play video games after this. And if I was inebriated all day, oh boy.
Hey, pool shark. Lupo. Anyway, it's BOGO at King's Coast Coffee for cocoa right now. So go get that BOGO cocoa. at kingscoastcoffee.com. That was immediately when Wayne first sent the ad that he made. I was like, Bogo Coco.
Bogo Coco.
So make sure you go over there and you get your Bogo Coco, because I believe, according to Wayne, this is the last year we're going to be sourcing cocoa from the place that we got it from, because he found a better source. Yeah, if you like the cocoa, now's the time, because next year's cocoa will be better than this year's. But who wants to wait? Besides, you can make so much mocha for the person asking, do you have King's Coast mocha? All you have to do is buy Bogo Coco, and then you could take a scoop of the Bogo Coco and put it in your coffee. Boom, mocha done. KingsCoastCoffee.com. Yeah, for Christmas presents, though, Hunter got Grogu from...
Oh, cool.
Pete's family sent gifts down, and he got a Grogu from them. I got a Boba Fett 1,000-piece puzzle.
Nice. You got Kyler a little lightsaber. Ooh. So he would stop taking mine.
$20 says he still wants to take yours.
He still wants mine.
That's pretty funny. Overall it was Star Wars and Christmas, but the best gift we got was the only thing left to talk about today. Oh, before we jump into that, guess what I finished?
What?
Aftermath.
Oh, okay.
I'm done.
Nice. Good.
Yeah, the ending was good, like you said. It was a payoff.
And did you like the? Okay, can we talk about the ending for a second?
Sure, of course.
What did you think?
Specifically, which part are you referring to?
Part where they talk about going off into the chaos to find Thrawn.
Yes, yeah. I mean, does that set stuff up into the Thrawn novels, or is that setting stuff up for what happens in Mandalorian?
Where Thrawn leaves off in the first trilogy, Thrawn 1, 2, and 3. The end of 3, it picks up right before Rebels, right before we meet him in Rebels.
I just started that first book where he's talking about how it's going to happen with his exile.
So he gets found while he's on quote unquote exile. Uh-huh. So I haven't finished up Ascendancy, but Ascendancy happens all before the original trilogy. So Ascendancy has nothing to do with any of that. Apparently it does retcon some stuff at the end of the last book, but I haven't gotten there yet.
They're talking about what happened with Ezra and going to find him because he's the only hope for the First Order, I guess. Is that the vibe that I was getting?
No, okay, explain because I must have misunderstood. They're still under the assumption that Thrawn is like their only hope to like rebuilding the Navy to its glorious position that it was previously. And so that's the whole thing, is like, we have to go find Thrawn. We have to go out into the chaos. We have to go past the Outer Rim to the chaos to find him.
But they know what happened to him with Ezra.
They don't.
Right?
I don't think they do. I don't think this is a tie-in to Rebels. I need to look at when this was written versus when the ending of Rebels happened, but I don't think this is a tie-in to Ezra. I think this is purely them just focusing on that Thrawn is out there. And they have to. The only reason why I find this so interesting is because that means that the remnants of the Empire goes out into the chaos to somewhere that they can't even navigate, and they go there out of just blind faith, in hopes that they can find the thing they're looking for.
So 2 points on that. Wouldn't that then link to what the conversation in The Mandalorian?
It would. Yeah, it would lead into the where is your master,
and then going out into the chaos. Wouldn't that link to Episode 9?
No. Episode nine is past the chaos. So when he goes to Mustafar. When he goes past Mustafar, when he's going to Exegol.
But isn't Exegol past the chaos? Oh boy, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, Exegol is past the chaos. And like that was the craziest part about all of that, is because like no one could have done that.
Unless without a navigator,
because the navigators use third sight, which is also a form of force sensitivity. But even then, like, it was really hard for Ben to get out there.
Is third sight the thing in the Thrawn books that the Skywalkers have?
Third sight is what Skywalkers use, correct.
Okay, it's all coming full circle for me now. I figured it would after I read the Thrawn novels, but now
so
it's
there's
like,
first sight, second sight, up. Third sight. Navigators use third sight in order to navigate the chaos. And okay. so the Navigator Guild, they're different from Skywalkers. They are also force sensitive. They can they navigate like Skywalkers, but they're less efficient. The Skywalkers in the Chiss Ascendancy, they're children, and so they're more resilient, and so they're able to do more. They're able to last. They get pushed hard, so that's the thing that they have to watch out for. That's why they have caregivers. Every Skywalker has a caregiver. Crazy enough that Skywalkers aren't the ones that become caregivers,
right?
Which I thought was very interesting. You'll learn about that in the books. But anyways, yeah. So I think that the end of Aftermath is really cool. I love how they set up Palpatine and that room they go into with all of the artifacts and whatnot at the end.
Jakku,
I thought that was
yeah.
really neat. Yeah, on Jakku. And so like they even like, what did you think about what he was using Jakku for?
It felt like it was one of again, it all links back to episode 9. Like he had a plan. His death, quote unquote, he had it all taken care of. Like death was nothing to him at that point because he was already on to the next thing between Jakku, the vaults he had scattered around the galaxy that we learned about in Battlefront, and all this stuff. Like the Emperor, he's been playing 4D chess since
before Anakin was born.
Yes. Well, theoretically, if the rumor is true, then that was part of the 4D chess.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he made it all happen.
So, I mean, it's truly, you can call it the Skywalker saga, but in my opinion,
no,
it's
the
more
Palpatine
like the Palpatine
saga. Yeah, it's all about the Palpatine. I talked about that on stream. Like from episode 1 to episode 9, it's all about the Emperor.
Overall with the books, I really felt like it was a slow burn. It felt like there's definitely some parts where the story just dogs throughout the trilogy.
Yes.
But I do like the characters a lot. And I'm kind of... I would love to see this played out on screen or in animation. Either
one.
I don't
think it will happen.
I don't think so either. They don't do that with books. The books are the books. They're for the super fans. But it does help you piece the puzzle together. There are playing cards if you want to see like Star Wars official visual interpretations of some of the characters. Like Sinjir has an official playing card that you can see what he looks like.
Oh, that's cool.
I think Jazz has one too, but yeah, I don't think we'll ever see it played out on screen, unfortunately, but I would like to see, you know, maybe we'll see the characters interact in other ways. But it'd have to be really subtle because if you were like Sinjir Rath Velis, only a handful of us would be like, yes, this is good.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, taking into account, but now I start the Thrawn trilogy, but I'm going to have to take a break because the new Republic book,
High Republic book just dropped.
Well, it comes out next
week.
Falling
Angel, right?
Alex and Molly got a early copy.
I saw that, dude. I was like, wait a second. There's no way it's out already.
Yeah, they got an early copy. But so, yeah, we'll have to take a break. And Tim and I will go over that book probably in like February, late February would be my guess, after we get a chance to read it.
I'm still working on Thrawn, so.
Oh, there you go. He's still working on Thrawn. It sucks that we can't review Thrawn together because I'm behind on that, but that is my fault for not being into the books until you told me you should read the books. Cool. Book of Boba Fett dropped about a few hours ago this morning. Episode 1. My overall feeling, and then we'll get into the details. It felt very... It explains a lot right off the bat, and I was happy they did that. But the whole episode felt like there was no meat on the bone.
Nope.
I liked what I saw, but I didn't think there was enough to justify it being, I don't know, part of the... It didn't feel like Mandalorian.
No.
While it did, it didn't. Does that make sense?
Well, that's the whole thing, is like Mandalorian season 1, episode 1 was such a massive episode. It was a big episode. A lot of things get kind of showcased very, very quickly. A lot of like fan service stuff, a lot of new things. And Book of Boba definitely, like you said, answered the question of how did he get out of the Starlark Pit. We knew how, we kind of knew how it happened after
I feel like they wanted to get that out of the way.
Well,
that's,
I mean, like
that, felt like
that it was already covered in the comic book. And so they needed to get it out. They needed to say like, no, this is how he survived. And they needed to fill in the gaps for the people like me, or like, well, how the hell did this happen? Like, you can't just say he's here. So I'm glad they covered it up. I wish they would have gone into more detail as to how the Sarlacc actually died. I wish they would have shown it as like the ending scene from episode 6, where Jabba's barge just like crashes right into the Sarlacc to kind of like just set the scene of like, okay, the Sarlacc is dead. This is what happens. Because you, the only way you know that he's dead is that they, because the tentacles aren't moving at the end, but like it's breathing and stuff. Like there's still things happening inside this monster. I love the acid. I love watching the stormtrooper just like melt apart. That was really neat. I don't like, here's one thing that I absolutely don't love is the part where he pulls the air tube out of the stormtrooper's neck and puts it in his own helmet to get oxygen back into him.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that was cheap as hell because we all know those stormtrooper helmets just come right on and off because you watch Luke do it in episode 4. I caught that right away. And I was like, there's no airtight seal there. It's not like he's in some space suit. He's literally just, he just, it's like in any other Star Wars movie, the helmet goes on and off. It's like there's no tighting sequence. There's nothing that like locks the helmet to his face. And he's like ripping this thing, I'm shoving it in there so he can get clean air. And just like, okay. So just like little things like that. I was like, you're really trying to make this work.
My favorite part was when he got rifle butted by the Jawa.
I thought they broke his face at that point.
The only like, one just, thing that would have made that better, it would have been if the Jawa yelled Utini while he smacked him in the face.
Just bitch slapped him with the back of their rifle. That would have been funny. Yeah, that would have been great.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, just like little things like that. I thought it was I just thought it was kind of wonky. It felt forced. Tatooine feels interesting. Feels like a very different different Tatooine that we haven't really experienced yet.
Mos Espa looks amazing. Like they nailed it with the visualization of the whole city, the overview, which we saw in the trailer. Mm-hmm. But even just walking around Mos Espa, what I love to do in Star Wars movies, and one of the things that Danielle pointed out to me when we were watching the sequel trilogy, was she's like, look in the background because it really shows you how much they care.
Yep.
About, you know, not a ton of CGI. It's mostly animatronic, costumed people walking around.
Come to find out, I know why Jon Favreau likes to not lean heavy into CGI. Jon, because when he did Elf, he wanted Elf to be a timeless movie. He wanted it to be a movie that you could go back 50 years from now and watch and still feel like it's brand new. He didn't want to use any type of visual effects that would become dated due to technology. And so I've noticed that a lot in John's work when he does his shows is that he uses a lot of visual props. He uses a lot of physical items in the show. Like you said, to your point, the backdrop, a lot of the backdrops, they were physical other than the big wide pan that we haven't even seen yet, where it's like down in the crater. Like we haven't seen any of that stuff. Everything's been real tight shots. Everything's been physical. Even like the back to tank, the amount of detail in that room with the back to tank, the droids that are running around, all of the different medical stuff, those were real things.
Keep
other than the droids.
Though, you don't know where the volume ends and where the
and
set
that's,
pieces
but
begin.
That's the thing is like they do a really good job of blending it all together so that you don't get caught up in the CGI, in the visual effects that they're trying to pull off, because they use so much actual physical mediums to really showcase what the points they're trying to get across.
Yeah, the way I looked at it was when JJ was making them, I watched an interview with him and he said, you know, if we put CGI into this, you know, it looks like the prequel trilogy, which the prequel trilogy almost looks like it's too modern for what happens after it.
Right.
So we wanted to keep pace with the original trilogy, which is why we used mostly physical props and mostly physical actors. And we really use CGI sparingly. So some of the aliens might look, in a sense, dated from a modern film perspective, but it fits in the Star Wars universe.
Yep.
And that's what the important part is. And John and Dave carry that torch of saying, you know, we want to make this look like the original trilogy, because the prequel trilogy, like some of the stuff is just like the instruments and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest problem with the prequel trilogy. The instruments, when Anakin's flying, it looks modern. It doesn't look like it looked. But then in this, they brought it back to that, you know, that 8-bit.
Yeah,
freaking,
that old analog look, like almost like from like Alien.
Yep.
You know, like that same look. But like to your point when they're saying like even like the monsters, they try to keep it feeling to the original Star Wars. And so they did that in Mando with the Blarg. The Blarg, they did a lot of like claymation or like a stop animation. They did a bunch of stop animation to make it feel like it was a part, like it was a mixture of stop and CGI. And they did the same thing with this, like this monster, the centaur monster that just like comes out of the dirt.
Swole-ass lizard centaur.
What was that thing? So first off, because we know that they like to use artists, like old art drawings, old reference drawings from old movies. I guarantee you this was like some weird mock-up that they came up with in the 70s that they were just high out of their minds, like, this would be so cool. And it never saw the light of day. But of course, I guarantee you this is what happened, that John and Dave, they found this thing. They're like, we got to bring this to life. We got to figure out how to make this thing work. Because it was like, it's something we've never seen before. So it's not like there's no way that's a new monster. It's not like they just like came up with it. I really think that they, a lot like the spider that we saw in Mando, this will all be something from a reference drawing of some sort.
I'll go through the book today and see if I can find it.
Yeah, please do. Because I would love to see if my theory holds true.
Yeah, people are going to say like, oh, well, what is this? We've never seen this in Star Wars before. But it's like, bitch, it's a fucking planet. Like, you think you know everything that's on Tatooine?
When you think of Tatooine, what are the first things that come to your mind?
Sand.
Luke.
The two sons. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So when he's walking through the desert with the little boy... child, well, I'm not going to assume it was a boy. The child.
No, he calls him a youngling. He calls him a.
Well, I'm saying not assuming gender, but
oh, I see.
Just
yeah,
the
yeah,
child
yeah.
itself.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When he's walking through the desert Chen, and they get to where the Weequay pirates are attacking.
Yes.
Is that supposed to be someone we know, or what was the point?
I don't know. I couldn't figure that part out.
Because at first I was like, oh my God, is this Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru? But then
no,
doesn't make sense at all in this timeline.
So he brought him to this place to watch this guy get the crap beaten out of him, them take his water and all of his supplies and leave. And then they left. So I honestly couldn't figure out that scene. I was very confused.
I'm excited to see Alex's video and go to the Den of Geek once they post their articles later today, because, you know, obviously we're early to this. And see if that symbol means anything too. The one they were kind of putting on the
spray painted on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that you know, this could be a reference to Hondo. I don't know. Who knows? But they were Weequay and they were pirates.
Yep.
So and they promised us familiar faces in this show, and we know Hondo's still alive because he's at Galaxy's Edge. So
oh my God, if they brought out a live action Hondo, that'd be so cool.
But you didn't go on Smuggler's Run. Live action Hondo exists.
Well, I mean, he's animatronic. He's not like. Like, I would love to see, like, them actually do the makeup and everything, like, on the person. They have to use the right voice actor.
Well, they do.
If it's not him, I'm going to be pissed.
He calls you on comms while you're in the ride, so there is an actor in full makeup doing it.
It wasn't CGI?
No, it is an actor. Okay. It is an actor. It is 100% an actor that calls you during the ride.
That's cool.
So it's doable, and maybe that was, like, a nod to the Weequay Pirates being a part. I don't know. And it would make sense because this show is going to be about the crime syndicate.
Yes.
I'm interested to see who the assassins were. They kind of matched up with, I looked up, remember Kanja Club from episode 7?
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, that's who they look the most like.
That's what I thought when I saw them. I was like, oh, these guys look familiar.
Oh, not Kanja Club. Who's the other one?
The guys with the red suits. But they didn't have the masks on. They're the other guys.
The Guavian Death Gang. Sorry, Kanja Club was the one.
They're the ones that have the masks on, right? From
the Guavian Death Gangs are the ones that come out first for Han, and then he says, you know, I sold them to Kanja Club or something. He's like, why don't you ask Kanja Club? And they're the Asian looking guys right behind him.
Got it. Okay.
So that's Kanja Club. So yeah, the Guavian Death Gang was the one. So to me, this is leading up to like we're gonna get into Black Sun. I have a feeling we might see Kira at some point.
Would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, like this. When they say familiar faces, you have to think of the underground and the darker underbelly, like the 1313, that whole crew, and kind of see who's available, who's alive, and all that stuff. So
I hope they make reference to Maul and talk more about that. I would hope they bring that all together. I would also like for Boba to potentially meet up with some of the older bounty hunters that we saw him working with in Clone Wars. Like, whatever happened to that? Where did they all go?
I loved when the Transdotion came in and they were having the game. I used to work for him. It was just harder for him. And
then even a compliment.
Yes. When was Transdotion gives you a compliment, why does it sound, I forget what he said. Exactly.
Why does it sound like a threat? Yeah. It was so good. And I was like, he's right. Because it's like, it's a big freaking lizard. Yeah,
that's true. The mayor, that altercation was very interesting.
That's going to go south. There's going to be a fight between those two for sure.
And I believe the mayor was in the trailer. I think it's the one.
He's the guy that everyone was like, oh, is that what's his face from Galaxy's Edge?
The Athorian.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, that's the what's his name from Galaxy's Edge. Like, no, that's not right. That's not him.
I think that's the mayor too.
Yeah,
which is gonna be
so.
A badass Athorian is gonna be the funniest thing. Because the closest we've come is we've seen a Thorian Jedi. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, they just kind of lumber around. They seem like so docile. So to see like a crime lord Athorian, it's going to be amazing. I did. Okay. So the back to tank scenes, first of all, him going to the back to tank makes plenty of sense.
After his skin got melted off.
It explains a lot. Well, the skin get melted off. And then I don't think it was just the skin that did damage to him, by the way. I mean, he's out in the desert and he's tied to a pole. So they even made it. If you look, his skin is probably reactionary from the acid, but also it's bleaching from the sun, too.
Yeah. But you have to remember that that was 5 years ago.
Right. So he's been
for him to continuously have to go into the back to tank to regenerate. I didn't like that. It makes him feel very frail. And I said that when I was like, oh, he had a fight and he's immediately just like, get me to the back to tank.
So keep in mind, this is not a series. This is a one-off. So this is it. So this could be Boba's death.
Interesting. So he could be dying.
Yeah. This could be the end of Boba. And then Fennec might be the one who takes over the Empire.
Oh, my queen.
Not that Empire. The crime.
The other one.
It's so difficult. Words. Anyway, so the back to tank. Tell me this, when he goes into the back to tank and he starts dreaming and they do that like melt to green sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Did that not feel like Assassin's Creed when they go in the Animus?
Now that you say that, I could see why you felt that way.
Yeah, it's almost like Favreau or Filoni were playing Assassin's Creed and went, huh, we could do this. Because the way it fades, like, almost digitally.
Yeah, it felt kind of Matrix-y, almost, the way that it was green and it was just all of that visual distortion.
I do like the look, because in Legends, we go deep into Sand People culture. And I want to learn more about them. You know, we got the glimpse of them with the sign language.
I like the one guy with the dreads and stuff. I thought it was really cool.
I think the two main ones, the one that fought him and the tall one, I think they're either one of them is the chieftain.
Yeah, the one who handed him the water, I think, is the chieftain.
Probably.
I liked how he kind of like he knew, but he let the kid have the moment.
Yeah,
and then he just like walks over. He was like, "Good job."
Nonchalant. He was making the motion like he beat it to death with his gaffy stick, and I was like, "Oh, that's adorable."
Yeah,
but that was a fun scene though, because the way he choked it out and then his face afterwards, he was just like,
"Well, the
what?
Look on, his positioning, everything was like." Don't fuck with me like that. That was that. I love that. He was like, you're lucky that you're alive. I'm allowing you to live.
I was hoping so happy that look. Squealing so little good. Rodian got killed.
Oh, he was so annoying. I hated him. Very typical for a Rodian.
Fucking Rodians.
Yeah.
Tim and Kevin are speciest.
Oh, shut up, chat.
It's a. Overall, also, what about the little Twi'lek whorehouse?
I mean, like seeing a male with his abs out, I thought that was super hot. I was like, oh man, they're ripped.
I saw this and I was like, Tim's gonna reference how ripped the male Twi'lek is and how ripped the monster is. Those are the two things that he took away.
I mean, you're right.
The
Twi'lek was just like that. I mean, they airbrushed his abs, dude. I mean, like there's no way that man was flexing the entire time that he was walking around.
That should be your cosplay for GCX.
Just be a male Twi'lek with chains.
Shirtless, ripped male Twi'lek.
I'm sure that'll go over really well for GCX, Kevin. Come on, John, experience your own Twi'lek whorehouse with Tim.
Dude, if you just walked out onto the Star Wars panel dressed like that with no context and no one said anything
so
the entire
so
time.
Uncomfortable. It'd be super uncomfortable.
Sitting next to Katie Sackhoff and Dave Filoni, that'd be crazy.
Oh my God, here we go. Oh, Dave's coming now too.
Who knows?
Anyways.
So it's an interesting that they would dive into that part of the Star Wars universe that it's always assumed. The poor Twi'leks. They're always sex slaves in the Star Wars universe.
But it looks like they do it to themselves.
Well,
so.
Okay, this is that whole mentality. It's almost the I don't want to say Stockholm syndrome, but kind of like that where, you know, well, we're stuck like this, so I may as well benefit from it. That's
could
kind
be.
Of
yeah, it could be
the vibe I got. And I know people are going to argue with me like, why do you think it's a whorehouse? Listen to the words she uses very carefully.
Yeah, it's
one, because
it's
Star Wars.
Paradise. It's definitely a whorehouse.
Yeah, they can only say certain things. And two, we know what happens with the Twi'leks and the Hutts and all that stuff. I did like also how Boba was like, no, I walk on my own 2 feet. And that
I
stuff.
Like that a lot.
So he's definitely going to be more justice oriented and less of
you,
a tyrant.
I mean, like he said that from the beginning. He said, Jabba ruled with fear. I want to rule with justice.
Right.
And so, like, right off the bat, he's already, like, we knew that from the beginning. We knew when we saw Boba Fett in Mandalorian, they were positioning him to be a anti-hero or a vigilante. And it looks like Star Wars is leaning more into that. They did that with Darth Vader. Like, they're slowly turning Darth Vader into an anti-hero, not so much the bad guy anymore, but he's kind of like this neutral, chaotic character.
Yeah,
and that's what Boba is. Boba is a chaotic, neutral character who is very much within the anti-hero spirit of Marvel, in it for himself, but understands the difference between good and bad. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see, like, which Boba Fett is this? Because it really hasn't been established. We saw the Boba Fett in Mando was still very much so. He was for himself, but he was just. Is this, like, are we going to see different forms of Boba? Are we going to see the dark, really ruthless from the original trilogy? Are we going to see more so the misunderstood, kind of broken character from Clone Wars? Or are we just going to get a completely different Boba Fett for this one? And so, like, there's a lot of baggage to unpack with Boba Fett. There's a lot of shit that he's gone through. And I'm curious to see if they continue to go down that road of, like, of acknowledging all of that and bringing it to the forefront like they did in episode one. Or is this going to be like a quick, like, hey, here's Boba Fett. This is everything you need to know about him in the first two episodes. And then it's going to be a completely different story.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree with you. I think that we are going to get, we have already seen a character shift in Boba Fett. And I think that this is who he is now. Keep in mind, we're basing everything off of two things. One, a character that barely had any lines through three movies.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you know, he's been way more fleshed out since then. And when I reacted originally to seeing him in The Mandalorian, I really was discounting a lot of the other material. And now, you know, since then, gone back and watched Clone Wars again, which he's in, read some of the comics and whatnot. His character is way more fleshed out. So this shift in his personality does make a bit more sense.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the comparison to Vader and almost the, I don't want to say anti-hero, that's not the right word, because Hulk is more of an anti-hero. They're still villains to an extent.
But in the same vein, Venom is an anti-hero.
Yes, I would say more like Venom and less like Hulk. So fair comparison. I don't know. I think they're really going to focus on the underworld and set up other.
I agree.
Underworld stuff. I'm realizing too, because remember originally we were like, this is probably the goodbye. They're going to focus on High Republic and Old Republic. No, yeah. I think Disney's Old Republic, High Republic, and now the focus is the era between Aftermath and Episode 7. That is where they're storytelling now.
I mean, it's a huge gray point.
Yep.
There's so much unknown. They still have yet to cover and explain the actual rise of the First Order.
Yeah, I mean, you get a glimpse of it in Aftermath. Oh my God! Oh, by the way, going back to Aftermath, kinda. The kids with Hux.
I told you they're terrifying, right?
Holy,
the kids
shit.
Are scary.
And the fact that Sloan had to broker an agreement with him so she wouldn't get murdered by them.
Yeah.
So I want to know what these kids become.
I don't know.
Are they officers in the First Order? Like, who are they?
Well, no, they all die. I assume they all died in that battle.
No, they're still alive.
The kids?
That's the whole point. Yeah, that's the whole point. Because the end of the book, when they're establishing what's going to become the First Order, when Sloane's like, this will be my First Order.
I remember this.
Because Brendel is...
but the kids are alive?
The kids are alive because she had... Brendel's the dad, right? Armitage is the son. So she brokers the peace with Brendel because Brendel's terrified of her now. Armitage, she basically says, like, look, if you tell the children not to murder me, you know...
Oh, I forgot about that part.
You'll have a place of power in the new empire.
I thought they died in the Battle of Jakku.
No, Armitage is the only one that can command them now because Gallius is dead.
Because Gallius is dead.
Right.
Interesting.
So who are they? Like that?
I don't know.
Maybe they become something. Maybe they don't. I don't know.
I think it's one of those things where it's just only the book fans would know.
Anyway, back to
interesting.
Boba. So yeah, so I think that's the area they're covering. So I think they're going to set up a lot of the underground syndicate stuff. Possibly,
agreed.
Even though the timeline is different, possibly link stuff back to Andor because Andor is going to, that's the world that this is going to exist in that part of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Whether it be characters, you know, Kira has a better chance of showing up in Andor than she does in Boba, but we honestly don't know who's in charge of the Black Sun right now. So who knows? Who knows? I do wish there was more storytelling in the current era. The flashbacks are good. They're informative. I get it. But it did feel a little bit like episode 9 in the beginning where JJ was rushing to fix all the stuff that he felt that Rian Johnson had changed in his story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I felt like in this episode. I liked it. I liked the setting. But I didn't. The storytelling was a bit off. And this is the second episode that Robert Rodriguez has directed that I've been like, meh.
Are they doing the same thing where they have different directors for different episodes?
I don't know.
Interesting.
Directors for Book of Boba Fett.
I think Bryce Dallas Howard.
Rodriguez is directing several of the series episodes.
Mm.
But he's also an executive producer with Favreau and Filoni.
So I wonder if he'll bring in other directors.
Well, they seem to have this little group of people that they like working
they
with, which
is
Deborah
Chow.
Yeah,
it's all the guys from Mando.
Bryce Dallas Howard. Who's the other one?
Who's the gentleman that I really like? He always wears the Yankee baseball cap.
Director.
He's really good.
He directed some of my favorites. I'm looking him up right now. Who directed each episode of? Rick Famuyiwa.
Is his name Rick?
Yeah, Rick Famuyiwa.
I like him. He's really good. He does a really good job. I like the way that he just does the episode. There's a specific way he does it, and you're just like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so it's them. It's them and Bryce Dallas Howard have pretty much been
the gang.
Yeah, the gang that's been directing all that. And Taika Waititi.
But he's busy doing Marvel stuff.
Well, he's also making a Star Wars movie.
And a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. So, like, keep this group together. This is the group I want storytelling for them.
Yes.
Like, these are the folks that need to keep telling Star Wars stories.
I agree.
You know, it's great that what's her name? Patty Jenkins, who's doing Rogue Squadron. But, mm-hmm. like, let these people make movies.
Agreed.
Like, don't just keep them in TV. So we'll see what happens. Friday is the next episode, I believe.
It sounds right. So, okay. So before we end the episode, predictions on episode 2.
I think we'll learn more about how he assimilates with the sand people because he's going to live with them for what, 4 years or something?
Yes.
So we'll learn more about how he assimilates with the sand people.
Does
I want you know more
though. Like, why do you like? Why would we care?
To show you where he's been and to live. They're
the
probably going to at some point they're going to drop you off where he's stalking
where he
Mando.
Finds, where he finds, but we already know what happens. We know how that ends.
No, they're going to drop you off there. Is what I'm saying.
Right, but like the whole, but okay, so what? They give us a whole episode of him hanging out with the sand people?
No, not a whole episode. They'll continue doing flashbacks when he's in the back to tank.
I know,
it's
just
gonna
like,
be
what,
like the
but,
Animus.
But like, what do you? But like, what do you cover?
It's
that's the whole thing. Is like, I don't think there's anything like interesting
so
enough.
So you think they're
with
done
him
with the flashbacks?
I think so. Like, I feel like you got a good look at what, like, how he got to him meeting Fennec Shand. Like, that was the whole point of that. Because everyone was like, what the fuck? How did he get there? Nobody knew how he really got there officially. What?
The next episode's next Wednesday.
Oh, really? They're not doing the back-to-back?
Yes. We got spoiled with Mandalorian.
Darn it, dude. They January did it 5th. So they did it so differently with Mando. It was just
which
like,
means,
here's your first episode, here's the next one.
Which means that Tim and I will be recording and releasing episodes on Wednesdays, so please keep that in mind.
Wednesdays?
Through Book of Boba Fett.
Okay.
So through February 9th, Wednesdays will be when we record because...
Wait, when is the last episode of Boba?
February 9th.
Really? That's short.
7 episodes.
Oh, man, we really did get spoiled with Mando.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. And there's nothing Star Wars related until the fall. Like movie or show wise.
They didn't put release dates out for Obi-Wan. They did start filming Acolyte, though.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Do we have a cast list?
Or they're reporting to filming in January. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was reporting to filming after the holidays.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm so excited for that one.
Just so you know, Tim, I'm changing all of the recording calendar invites to Wednesdays.
That's fine.
Through February 9th.
We're doing this for you, chat.
For you! It's
that's
also
okay,
because
Wednesday is my rest day. Kevin's rest day sometimes, too, so it works.
Yeah, it's our off day, so it shouldn't be a big deal. But, I think you'll get more flashbacks. I know you're saying no, but I think you'll get more. I would prefer that the story be told more in the... I'm saying current. You know what I'm saying when I say
yes,
current.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Current timeline than flashbacks, because it's great to know, like you said, and it's cool, but I am more curious what's going on with the current world and, you know, how this is all going to play out. Obviously there's a vacuum right now and a power struggle is inevitable. So that's what I want to know is what's happening in the current world, the crime bosses. I'm very interested in the storyline with the mayor. And I want to see more of that. So please, less flashbacks and more of this.
That's the whole thing, is like this sets this whatever happens here also ties into all of the other shows that are being made for the most part, because we've got Mando. Ahsoka. We'll have Mando season 3. We'll have Ahsoka. Those two shows are going to, like, I would assume things that happen in Book of Boba will help set the stage for those shows coming up to a certain degree. I think Mando season 3, we know, is going to be primarily focused on the planet of Mandalore. We know that it's going to be a lot of, at least we assume it's going to be a lot about the people of Mandalore and how we whatever happened to the planet. We're finally going to figure out what happened there. I think we have all come to the agreement that Ahsoka is going to be primarily focused on the end of Rebels and what happened there with Thrawn and Ezra and Sabine. Like, the whole crew is going to get back together again, because we know a lot of these people have already been casted for those roles, which is pretty freaking cool. And then Acolyte and Cassian Andor and Obi-Wan, we all know, are going to be prequels. They're all going to be in the past. They're all going to be before the events that are happening right now. There's a good spread, Kevin. But I think Book of Boba is definitely, I think there's going to be some things that are going to happen that will end up affecting at least the storytelling of Mandalorian to a certain degree.
Yeah, I agree. Do you think we'll see Din Djarin and...
I don't think we'll see Din. I think we will see familiar characters. I think we might get like an Ahsoka potentially. For Din to go to Tatooine wouldn't make sense, because they were already out in the Outer Rim. Boba goes one way.
Do you think they're only going to be on Tatooine the whole show?
I think I asked you that question a couple of weeks ago in your thoughts on, do you think that we're going to leave? Oh, maybe we were talking about Obi-Wan. Same question, though, is like, these two characters are very much so tied to that planet. Now, because what's the point of a daimyo? What is the point of a daimyo leaving his realm?
Yeah.
He's a ruler. He's a governing body. He's a sovereign leader. What's the point of leaving the thing that you hold most dear to you?
Yeah, I agree with you.
So I don't think we'll see Slave One. We don't call it Slave One anymore. What do we call it now? Boba's ship.
It's Boba's ship.
No, there's an actual... there's a designation for it. Is it Firefly?
Something. No.
That's wrong show. Wrong show.
Wikipedia still has it as Slave
Firebug?
One in canon.
No, what's... No, because...
Firespray 31 is the type of ship that it is.
So the Firespray is the class designation, but they called it Firespray as well, or Boba's ship.
It's still called Slave One on Wikipedia.
So I went and bought my brother for Christmas that Slave One model, the one that threw it, that everyone got super pissed off about because it didn't say Slave One. It said Boba's ship on it. I went and got it, and I'll be damned. It says Boba's ship right in the front of it. It doesn't have any other call sign for it, which I thought was really strange. But yeah, I don't. If we end up seeing the fire spray, or we end up seeing Slave One, it'll be for him traveling from one spaceport to the next. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're gonna get space battles. There's no reason for him to go there. Unless he's gonna go meet with the other crime lords throughout the Outer Rim.
Well, that would be the only reason I can see him leaving the planet, is if he has to deal with business with Black Sun or.
Yeah, but he has no reason to mess with Black Sun.
Well, Black Sun might mess with him because of this power vacuum. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. Yeah, but that's the whole thing. It's like there's a power vacuum on Tatooine. I don't think there's a power vacuum amongst the syndicates.
If it messes with supply chains and, you know, illegal cartel activity, that could be a reason. I guess
it depends. It depends on what resource they hawk out of Tatooine.
Also, you don't know what the Hutts are going to do. They might retaliate.
Yeah, but Jabba died 5 years ago. They should have retaliated at the beginning. If there was a Hutt power struggle for Tatooine,
what if Bib was a puppet?
No, Bib sees an opportunity.
But what if he was a puppet of the Hutts? But just
I don't
had
think
power?
He was. I think he was. I think Bib was chilling out there on his own. I think either the Empire destroyed the Hutts at some point and we didn't know about it, which is something that could happen. Because if you go through Clone Wars, the Hutt syndicate, the Hutt family. Very much so, still very strong. When we get to episode 6 and we meet Jabba, we don't know what happens.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
There's 5 families of the Hutt cartel. That's the way it works.
Right. And we meet them in Clone Wars.
Right.
But we don't know what happens between that point and the end of episode 6.
I don't think they're gone. I think
Jabba had a family. Where's his family? They're dead.
But you want the Hutts. Jabba's family might be dead, but like I said, there's more. But I mean, the Pikes are out there. The Crimson Dawn is out there.
Oh, sure.
So.
There's lots of. Well, I mean, like as long as you don't mess with the Pikes' spice, you're good.
Right. And
so they're off there farming.
But Jabba might have been running spice with the Pikes. So who knows?
Could have been. Yeah.
So who knows? Or
it'll be interesting.
Even if it wasn't Jabba, Bib took over and Bib knew the system. Boba's walking in there. He doesn't know what the hell is going on.
Well, it seems like this Daño from Mos Espa. From Espa, the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I think he, to your point of Bib being a puppet, maybe Bib was his puppet.
That's what it sounded like.
Maybe he knew that Bib Fortuna was the mouthpiece of Jabba the Hutt. So in order to keep power, to make things like things are still good, you put Bib in the seat of power because everybody recognized him as being Jabba's right-hand man. But the mayor's running everything from behind the scenes. That's an interesting take, Kevin. I like that.
Before we run, one thing we didn't talk about was the Gamorrean bodyguards.
Dude, they were so dope. They were really cool.
I don't like the way Fennec said this is a bad idea, though.
Why? She doesn't trust anybody. She thinks everything's a bad idea.
I hope they're not. I hope they are loyal to a fault.
I think seeing how quickly they came running in to save him, I would and put his ass in a back to tank and not slit his throat, I would say they're loyal.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I think it'll be okay. I think Fennec is just. I think she is just very. Antsy.
Also, they
She's
looked
got some
like
trust issues.
They looked like I do because they had their pot bellies,
but they had nice ripped chest. They weren't the fat guys. They weren't the fat guys from episode 6. Like those guys were actually like those guys were on. They were jacked.
But that's the difference. That's been my weight loss journey. Tim is like I was a Gamorrean and now I'm like Gamorrean bodyguard. Where yeah, I still got my pot belly, but the chest and the arms are looking good.
Two. Nice. V2 Gamorrean. Love it.
Yeah, I'm a Gamorrean workout plan.
Oh my god, Kevin, you should do that. You should start a Star Wars Gamorrean workout.
Oh my god, that would be hysterical. We'll game plan it in the new year. Thank you so much for checking out episode 64 of Star Wars and Scotch, all about Boba Fett, or the Book of Boba Fett, chapter 1. I love that they're doing it. That's the one thing I like. They're following the formula that worked for Mandalorian, and I don't want them to deviate from this formula.
I also had someone ask me, what's the, like, so I was like, is this a show about a book? And I'm like, no.
It's just Boba reading a book.
It's just like, yeah, just like by a fireplace. It's just like. Chapter 1.
Things got a little dicey in Mos Espa.
Mace Windu killed my dad. I was really hoping his head was going to fall out. Every time, dude. Every time I see that scene with Boba and the helmet and they're just forehead to forehead, I'm just like, his head could fall out at any moment. Any moment, that head could just plop right out. It just never does. It never does.
Oh, man. You can check us out. We're Star Wars and Scotch. I'm sorry, Star Wars Scotch on Twitter. You can check out Timmy's Darkness429 everywhere. But he's live Monday through Friday on Facebook. epi.gg/darkness429, 9 a.m. Eastern, which means he's got to go now. But thank you so much for checking out the show. Everything I do is raredrop.co. Head over there, and you can check out all the other episodes of Star Wars and Scotch and all the other great shows that we produce, like Overplayed or comics or whatever you're into. We probably have a show for that.
Probably.
Just not weird, kinky shit. But thank you again. And we will see you next week, not Friday, next week, January 5th, for Chapter 2 of the Book of Boba Fett. Have a happy, happy new year. And Tim?
May the Force be with you.
Happy New Year.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.